Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of Sports Drink Network. This is Nick coming to you solo dolo from the Houston Outpost on the verge of a cold, but not on the verge of getting a cold, a verge on beating the living daylights out of a cold before one comes on. I had a long weekend, baby. Long weekend afforded to me with the joy of a Steelers early victory on Thursday. I've mentioned before on the podcast, that I'm a musician by trade, and I do a bunch of corporate and wedding shows in addition to original shows and touring and releasing music with my band Astro Wind. But over the weekend, we played a wedding in Austin. Great. Got home at about 4 a.m. Think every single member of the band was already sick. One guy's tonsils were about the size of Kenny Pickett's hands. So, you know, as far as hands go, not large. As far as tonsils go, very large. And I felt myself coming down with a little something today, so the pod's coming out a little bit late, but guess what? I'm taking it easy. I'm going to recover. Hopefully Kenny's ribs recover as I tie everything back together here as cheesily as I possibly can. But that being said, there's been a lot of time to digest the Steelers' win as a result of some of my traveling. Was unable to get the podcast out, but it's kind of more fun doing it now that we've had a full weekend of NFL action to digest, and we've had more Steelers action to digest. We've had a Steelers wide receiver making a scene on Twitter. Stop me if you've heard me before. We've had quite a bit of quarterback talk. We've had offensive coordinator talk, so on and so forth. That being said, let's start with some good news. Steelers got some dogs. They got some young dogs. The rookies are playing, and the rookies are absolutely killing it. Don't say it too loudly, but this is looking like a very nice foundational draft class for the Steelmen, with Joey Porter Jr. starting again, playing awesome, and Broderick Jones starting again, actually switching sides to right tackle, playing awesome. Big upgrade. Nick Herbig obviously keeps making noise. Counter Benton makes noise. That is four guys. We're going to play a legit role for the Steelers, hopefully, going forward. So that's great. All right, onward to the No, just kidding. More good news. Matt Canada has called two awesome games in a row. Truly, he has been getting people open on a more consistent basis. The Jacksonville game probably had a little bit more of that, especially with some of the deep shots that were open. Granted, there was a wide-open deep shot during this game that the Steelers weren't able to complete, but the run game has started to come alive. You've been able to see the thunder and lightning thunder of Najee Harris and Jalen Warren. They scored a touchdown in the red zone off of a pick play. I never thought I would see the day, but it's happening. That touchdown was thrown to one of the better receivers in the NFL who has not scored a touchdown in over 600 days, Diontae Johnson. So they're just breaking down barriers left and right. And so not only does this make the Steelers' offense better in the immediate and in the short term, but it makes them more watchable, which I think has been the theme of this podcast for the past few years. Can we just make the Steelers watchable again? Because even when they win, it sucks. But right now, it's kind of resembling a slightly upgraded version of what we saw at the end of last year, where it's like, all right, They're scoring 2 touchdowns a game, which is music to our ears if you asked us in the first 5 weeks of the season. But all the games are pretty exciting. They come down to the last second. They come down to the last drive where Kenny Pickett is going to become an all-star and make an amazing throw to help win the game like he did to Deontay Johnson on a go route down the sideline this week. And the Steelers are going to have a big win. And that is more fun to watch. Would we like to have 4 quarters of fun football? I would settle for 2 even at this point. But clearly that's improving. So Matt Canada, honestly, big part of that. Once again, coming out of the bye, new and improved. And how he's improved, these are trackable reasons. And if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty and the X's and O's in it, of it, obviously we always love to shout out our favorite Steelers follows on Twitter, at John Ledyard, his new podcast, Yin's No Ball, probably gets the award for best Steelers podcast name. I think that was Brad, PFF Brad, his co-host who made that up. Derek on Twitter, you got Alex Kazora, Fairball. These guys are giving you great breakdowns and film breakdowns of what's going on there, but plenty of it's available on the TV copy. You notice it very obviously while the game is going on. Hey, there's George Pickens, not on the outside. Okay, more on George Pickens later, but there's a pick play, there's trips. All these things we've been talking about for the better part of 3 years here, you're starting to see more of it. They are pulling linemen. They are calling play action. They called a number of play action, almost like 10-something play action plays during the game after usually getting maybe 1 or 1 pulling guard per game. So it's funny to give credit for these things because they're so basic, but it is it's measurable. Those improvements are objective. Hey, you need to try some of these things. Did we throw to the middle of the field? No. Did Kenny Pickett have the worst, but most Steelers looking passing heat chart of all time with every single pass except for that one to Deontay, 1 yard in front of or behind the line of scrimmage, completely to the left or right? Yes, that also did happen. But it is improving. And with that improvement does come fear, because that's life. And there's a fear, oh my God, Mike Tomlin is going to see this and say, eh? Told you. Told you. They said we couldn't do it. They said we couldn't beat one of the least talented teams in the league this year, the Tennessee Titans, by the skin of our chin, because we don't play NFL offense. But guess what? We did. So you know what we're doing? We're keeping Matt Canada for 3 more years, baby. We're going to tie him and Kenny. Screw it. 20 more years. Matt Canada, Kenny, look at him improve. Yeah, so there is some fear about that, but I don't think it's well-founded. I think that Canada's basically already lost his job, and judging by the way that the Steelers' offense is improving, we do like this, but they're still having trouble finding the end zone, and they're still terrible, but they were in the basement of the basement before, and now they are moving up the ranks just a little bit to being able to be functional. You know, Canada's contract's running up, so on and so forth. But regardless of what you think about the long-term outlook of Canada, we do need for him to be a competent offensive coordinator for the rest of the season, because as I mentioned in the last podcast, there is truly one main point to this entire year. Sure, we do need to see rookies and see how they play. That's why this game was so exciting. Hey, who do we have to lean on in the future? You know, Dad mentioned a great point the other day with Cam Hayward. It says, hey, sucks about the injury, but at least it took him off the field for a little bit, as long as it's not some long lingering thing into his older age here. But, you know, save Cam for another run next year. Yeah, we need to look at a lot of things, but there's really only one point to this entire season, and it's Kenny Pickett and figuring out whether he can be the guy or not. And it's very difficult, not impossible, but very difficult to determine whether Kenny's a guy when he's playing in a middle school offense. And so let's say Kenny's not the guy, and you went through this whole year and you kind of objectively know at a certain point, even Mike Tomlin can admit, not that he's in the dark, but you know, at a certain point, okay, this isn't going to work with Canada. Everybody on the earth realizes that this guy calls plays that are too predictable. It's a 3-year sample size. This guy isn't it. But I don't know if that means Kenny's good enough or not yet. So let me see Kenny one more time with a competent offensive coordinator. And then they get a competent offensive coordinator, and it's a big change for everybody. He says, okay, cool. If that was a competent offensive coordinator, let's give him 1 more year, because Kenny did a good job here, but 2 years under the same coordinator, that's when you're really going to see the stride. So now we're on year, what, four of Kenny Pickett at that point. And that is Daniel Jones, everybody. And Daniel Jones just got over $40 million a year, and he's awful for the New York Giants. There does come a point when you have to turn around and you have to say, hey, it doesn't matter what coordinator this quarterback is with, there are certain things that we should be seeing, and there are certain instances where we can see the quarterback play independent of the coordinator. It doesn't matter who the coordinator is. When you're looking at an open receiver, you throw the ball to him, and it doesn't land anywhere near him, right? That's regardless of coordinator. But I will say I'm excited for Kenny to get the chance with at least competent play calling if it keeps up from the past two games, which it looks like it should, because they've really opened up a lot of things for themselves. So excited about that. And then that does bring us to the Kenny question, which I don't want to spend too much time on because I do feel like I sort of railed on it last week, but it felt like maybe a little prescient because after I gave an entire podcast on that, it's that same topic has dominated the airwaves both locally and nationally since Kenny's terrible game against the Titans. Please do not get triggered. Please, Kenny fans. I am a Kenny fan. I did not want them to draft him initially, as I said on this podcast. And then over the course of the year, I said, especially the way he ended last year, the way he did the preseason, hey, I don't know if this is the guy or not, but he's definitely better than I gave him credit for, and he's showing some true great NFL quarterback qualities. Obviously, the clutch gene, it's sort of hard to argue at this point. Do I think he's going to win every single fourth quarter for forever? No, but you can't deny. The guy's got like six fourth quarter game-winning drives, and he plays very well on those drives. He makes throws on those drives that he doesn't even attempt in the rest of the game. So that's great. His scrambling ability, again, it's okay. It's kind of one of his worst traits, to be honest with you, because it worked for him well in college. But now in the NFL, he's having trouble adjusting to NFL defenses and realizing, oh, I can't just scramble around, guys. But yada, yada, yada. I digress. So it's looking bad, guys. And here's the reason why. Like Kenny, love Kenny. The intangibles, off the charts. Totally seems like the guy. But we pointed this out earlier in the year when he missed a couple wide open throws against the Niners. We said, okay, that's kind of weird. He hasn't shown bouts of inaccuracy yet. Let's see what happens the next game. Boom, he does it again. Right? Okay, odd. He's kind of, maybe he got spooked from the hype that was generated from such a great preseason and then getting absolutely emasculated by the 49ers. But give him some time to even out. We'll see what's up. Okay, now some time has gone by. Missing a few wide open throws per game, minimum, is not, it's not going anywhere. It's part of Kenny's game. And the Steelers should have blown out the Jaguars, honestly. They should have blown out the Titans by a lot. And these fourth quarter drives, this is really becoming a Jimmy G thing to me. Where you say, look at these fourth quarter drives, look at these wins. But if you watch the actual game, you can acknowledge, here's the problem. I know he doesn't have a lot to work with because he had the coordinator, but I pointed out all the wide open missed throws he had last week. I'm not going to point out every single one from this week, but it's happened again. The George Pickens crosser on third down, he's got nobody on him. That one is absolutely brutal. This is, by the way, guys, this is me saying this with a sad heart. Because I want him to be good. You say, oh, he's got ribs, he's got this, he's got that. It's a 10-yard pass to somebody with a clean pocket with nobody on him, and he misses it by 5 yards. And then he did it five more times during the game. Just absolutely whiffing on guys. And now, as we warned the audience at the beginning of this year, George Pickens is already on the verge of demanding a trade after his Twitter or Instagram moment the other night saying free me and unfollowing Kenny, unfollowing Tomlin and the Steelers. If anybody at this point is trying to claim that those things don't mean anything, I don't know what to tell you. They have meant something for many years. It might not mean something to you. That might not be how I would send a message in the public, but very clearly that's how NFL players of that age group send a message. There's nothing to interpret there. That's what Pickens is doing because guys had three catches over the past 3 weeks. He had two catches for negative 1 yards this past game. Yeah, I know he dropped the ball 2 weeks ago, but let's not let our emotions cloud our judgment. There's this war going on over Kenny. There's some people trying to do a victory lap on, we always knew this guy would never be good. There's a lot of people in denial who love Kenny a lot of times from the Pitt days and trying to say, oh, he'll improve this, he'll improve that. Meanwhile, you look around the league and you see C.J. Stroud having 470 yards and four or five touchdowns in one game. C.J. Stroud has more career touchdown passes than Kenny has. And C.J. Stroud's played nine games in his whole career. Kenny's, you know, got well over a year under his belt. And maybe it's unfair to compare to C.J. Stroud because C.J. is actually quietly having statistically the best rookie year of all time. I mean, he looks phenomenal. Dad and I saw him live in Houston. The guy is a quarterback. And that was a sad day for us too because you could just see the physical difference with the two guys on the field. Like, man, he's just, you know, C.J. was never billed as the way that the USC guy, Caleb Williams or Drake May is being billed this year. I was like, this is an absolute freak, can't miss. It was, hey, here's an Ohio State prospect. He's, you know, totally NFL ready. He's going to be a top 10 pick. Could be the number one pick. I don't know. It looks pretty good. But then you see him on the field. It's like, yep, he's huge. He's smooth. He's completely unfazed in the pocket. These are all things Kenny has trouble with. But at the end of the day, it comes back to one thing. You just can't miss the target as often as Kenny does. The pocket's clean. The guy's open. He sees him. He throws it. It doesn't go to the receiver. We take that for granted in the NFL because we so rarely see it. And sure, a guy will miss a throw every once in a while, but this is every game, multiple times. It's taking points off the board. Calvin Austin should have had an 80-yard touchdown in this game, and Kenny underthrew him by another 5 yards. That's multiple games in a row where he's missing wide-open touchdowns. And I know the people who are trying to defend Kenny are getting upset, saying, Deontay dropped this and dropped that, or Canada's not a good coordinator. And I agree with you. Deontay did drop a screen pass into his chest on the play before he scored the touchdown. But Deontay having bad moments doesn't change the missed throws that Kenny is having. So all the reasons that I'm seeing to defend Kenny are logically, you're not really made. These, you know, an argument is not being made because we're talking about when you're looking at the guy and you throw it and it doesn't go to him. We take it for granted with NFL quarterbacks, like I was just saying. But you kind of realize, like, that's the difference in the NFL. Like, you can go out in the backyard and there's some people who can sling it. But when you have all these people around you and you can't get your feet underneath you perfectly, especially when you don't have a great arm like Kenny. And I know people get mad. They'll send a highlight of, look at this throw. And I'll say, I totally agree. His arm is definitely good enough to be in the NFL. But you look at Will Levis on the other side and you say, okay, his arm is definitely not that. And Will Levis is just one of many starting NFL quarterbacks who have great arms. And what that affords you is the ability to get rid of the ball accurately and have it get to the target quickly when your feet aren't perfect. Because the NFL, the pockets are so much smaller and dirtier that you're not always able to get your entire body into your throw. And Kenny's kind of like Tua in that right, where they need to get their whole body into the throw if they wanted to go where they wanted to go. And we've all poo-pooed the whole small hands thing, but I actually did have a moment this weekend where I thought, man, maybe the small hand and the glove thing is actually a bigger deal than we make it. And for the record, we did point out on the podcast during the preseason that the hands thing is a big deal. Like, but we just said, okay, he seems to have a way to get around it. But I remember going to, there's like this modern science or like rock museum or something in Seattle, and they had a Seattle Seahawks room, and they had an imprint of Russell Wilson's hand on the wall. So you can measure how big your hand is compared to Russell Wilson's. Russell Wilson is 5'11", I'm 5'11". His hand, when I say it was twice the size of my hand, and I don't have huge hands, but they're probably a little bit on the larger side. His hand is truly twice the size of my hand. You see the same thing about Aaron Rodgers, freakishly large hands. Ben, you know, Brady. There's a reason why these guys are generally very big, because they can control the ball. The more you can put your hand around the ball, the more accurate you're going to be until a certain point where then, yeah, you could be like Shaq shooting a free throw where the hand's too big or whatever, right? I think McAfee made that comparison the other day when Devontae Adams was shooting hoops on the mini hoop in the Raiders locker room. But those big hands help you to control the ball. Think of when you're a kid trying to throw the high school ball. It's hard to get your hand around it. The NFL ball, the Duke, it's massive. And Kenny has to wear gloves to get it done. And the thing with the gloves are like, yeah, there's a couple guys ever who have worn them. And the one nobody mentions is Ben, early in his career, would wear them in the playoffs and every once in a while later. But you would see Ben miss a throw or two that would go into the dirt because those gloves, the only issue is you have to be very precise with the moment of releasing the ball, because if you hold on just a minute too long, it's going to go into the dirt. And if you let it go, and then you might have to let it go a little bit too soon, and then it's going to fly over guys' heads. So the misses Kenny is having, they are so bad. Like the distance that he's missing the target by, it's so bad that it does make me wonder, like, huh, maybe he has trouble controlling the football. So I see, you know, we're a smaller podcast, and I see some of our friends online with the bigger podcasts. We mentioned, you know, Derek and John and these guys, bigger followings. I've been impressed with their restraint towards making an official declaration on Kenny, even though they clearly have, you know, come to the conclusion as well. And I assume that must be because they get so much vitriol in the comments from people who are sad about it. That being said, we don't have the same type of following. We don't have quite the same output daily, you know, doing it full time and just absolutely crushing it like all those guys do. They do a great job. Love following along, love interacting with them. But maybe that gives me the ability to say, you guys, I think it's done. I think it's clear. I don't think that this is a reactionary in the moment thing. I believe, as most people have said, including the NFL, by letting Kenny slip to 20 before the draft, hey, this is a very bad quarterback class. Kenny's an awesome college quarterback. He's not a bona fide first round guy because he doesn't have any of the physical tools that are plus. They're all fine. He's definitely an NFL quarterback. But to be a first rounder and a starter, he would have to be a huge exception. And then, boom, there comes Bryce Young, who would be a similar. Like, okay, he doesn't have any physical traits that are above the line, but he has absolutely unbelievable pocket presence and processing, which Kenny doesn't have either one of those things. That's not how he played the game. He played the game at Pitt. I'm going to hit my first read. I'm going to kill it. If not, I'm going to scramble, make a big play. And you still see him able to do that in the NFL, but you can't make a living off of it, right? And Bryce, you know, being so great in the pocket and being in Alabama, we'll see how he does. His line sucks. The team sucks. We'll see, yada, yada. But everything that's happening with Kenny, these are just like, you definitely can become more accurate in the NFL. And Josh Allen's a great example. Tom Brady retooled his throwing motion. Actually, everyone, even Aaron would probably tell you, and Ben, you kind of retool your throwing motion all the time. But the problem is so many of Kenny's issues sort of stem from the fact that he's a small guy, like just trying to make it happen, and he's having a lot of difficulty doing it. And then you just look at all the quarterbacks popping up. You even see Anthony Richardson in the first few games, how at home he looked. And, you know, when they were going to draft Kenny, I was begging for Gardner Minshew. I love Gardner. Obviously, he's hilarious, but is Kenny a better prospect than that, or is that guy just a late-round pick? You know, Sam Howell has, like, tripled Kenny in touchdown passes, it feels like, in just a couple games that he's played so far this year. And with all these quarterbacks, Levis, Howell, Stroud, those teams suck. You can't give them the Brock Purdy treatment of, oh, well, they're on Shanahan's team with an all-star cast. No, I just think it's sort of, we're watching a little bit of a Jimmy G thing happen in front of our eyes. And I just hope that the Steelers have the stones to make the change from him after the season if it doesn't dramatically improve. And I am rooting for it to dramatically improve. I'm just giving my opinion here that I think this kind of is what it is. And if you're following the rest of the league, you know, if we weren't Steelers fans and this guy were in Cincinnati, would we really be that scared of what was coming after us? Like, oh, no, just wait. He's going to erupt. Or would we be like, nice, the way we were with Dalton? Like, all right, good enough to not get fired. So them keeping or not keeping Kenny, depending on how the rest of the year goes, is really going to say a lot about the Steelers franchise, because I think we all agree the reason why they're in this position of being just above mediocre is because of their overly loyal tendencies. If you look at Minnesota, they had historically one of the worst defenses in the history of the NFL last year. they got rid of all of their best players. They got Brian Flores from the Steelers. Their defense is dramatically improved. So their roster got worse. Their defense got better because they got a great coach who the Steelers let out the door because they didn't want to give him the upgrade over Terrell Austin because Terrell Austin was there first. And so you can say, hey, that's an awesome thing to do for a guy, that loyalty to Terrell Austin, but you're being disloyal to the rest of your players because you could give them a better defensive coordinator and that would help them keep jobs. So that's one like, all right, well, you let that get out the door. Okay, Matt Canada. I don't think it's necessarily loyalty to Matt Canada that kept him there, especially if you listen to Mike Tomlin give interviews, give press conferences. I don't remember how much he talked about this on Ben's podcast, but I think Matt Canada was almost strictly for the fact that we do not want to change Kenny Pickett's offensive coordinator from rookie year to sophomore year. And I think that that was their philosophy there. And look, we started winning some games. We started running the ball, started showing a little thing or two at the end of last year. So there is something to believe in there. I don't think Mike Tomlin is, I just love Matt so much. That's my guy. I'm going to believe in him. I think that they just think that these systems take time and sometimes they have difficulty ripping off the Band-Aid. So I am rooting for Kenny. Like I say, he's just so likable. And when he does make those amazing plays, they are awesome. Like, it's not just lucky. I mean, that was a dime he threw to Deontay. You know, the game-winning touchdown passes at the end of the last year. We've seen him make some nice plays. The problem is that's not what an NFL quarterback is. Like, you guys, we've seen Mason Rudolph make nice plays too. Nice bombs down the field. That's not a starter. That's not a guy who's going to help you compete with Joe Burrow. When you watch them play, it's like, oh, right, yeah, that's what it was like. I remember that. That was awesome. And even then with Joe or Ben, like, Joe doesn't have a Super Bowl yet. He may never get one. But the whole league is designed off of two things, coordinator and quarterback. You look at everybody who's making the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl these days. We could go through the list, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes versus Jalen Hurts and Steichen. And the year before you got Joe Burrow, you got Matt Stafford and McVay. You just, the year before that's Tom Brady and Mahomes and Reid, yada, yada, yada. So that's how the game is played now. And that is unfortunate because I did have the thought that this Steelers team will be so much more fun to watch if the rules were still the rules of 10 years ago, because the Steelers defense will be able to hit people right in the face. No problem. And the Steelers would create havoc. They would be able to shut teams down if they were able to use physicality, especially across the middle. And the games would be more competitive as a result. The Steelers would have more short fields. They'd probably even create more turnovers. And it would just be fun. It used to be fun to watch a defense flying around out there. And so some of the new rules in terms of, you know, the blindside block, honestly, it's probably a good rule. It's, you don't need to hit somebody super hard when you're blindside blocking them. There's been a bunch of highlights this year of guys effectively blindside blocking by just kind of running in front of the guy and then dodging out of the way at the last second. It's just too much for a defender to be able to turn around and say, oh, there's a man, and then dodge him and then catch up with the ball carrier. So that rule, there's an example of, hey, that's good for player safety. But then, you know, hitting the defenseless receiver in the head, you know, obviously that one's very tricky given the fact that a defender could be aiming for the guy's stomach. He makes the catch. He turns around. Oh, crap, there's a defender there. I'm going to go into turtle position. And what has he done? Well, he's lowered his head into the strike zone that the defender was aiming for to tackle him safely. And then, boom, he gets hit in the head. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. So some of those improvements are good. Some of them are bad. But the unfortunate byproduct is, and the byproduct that everyone in the world should care about, is the Steelers aren't as good as they could be, because we know that the Steelmen will be punching people directly in the jugular, and they'd be getting a penalty for that, but it wouldn't be crazy because they'd also be bashing dudes legally under the rules, and we'd have more fun watching them. But that's not how the game's played. It's played with a coordinator and a quarterback, and unless Kenny takes the most enormous jump you guys have ever seen, or if the Steelers somehow bribe Shanahan or McVay to lessen their responsibilities, get out of California, get out of those taxes, get over there to the Pennsylvania taxes, yeah, then the Steelers are really in a bad position in terms of being able to truly compete for Super Bowls again. What they will be doing is what they've been doing for the past 5 years, which is behaving like the Vikings and the Cowboys. Okay, we're perennially 8-8. Now, back in the old days, I know there are more games now. But okay, maybe one year we'll have a game where we win a few more games. But everyone knows when it comes time for the playoffs, we're going to play a real team and we're going to get crushed. You know, that's what they're heading for. And that's kind of what they headed for even when they drafted Kenny with the first round pick, was just this hope. Like, okay, he doesn't have any of the physical qualities of an elite quarterback, not just from this era, but from any of the prior eras. Kenny wouldn't be considered an elite physical quarterback. Okay, and then secondarily, he doesn't show the ability to play in the pocket. So we're just going to hope that he develops all these things because we think his intangibles are great. The Steelers need to stop running the team like that. And so those are my overarching thoughts coming out of this game. I'm still going to root like hell for him. I hope he improves. Who knows if the Steelers will even have an opportunity to upgrade significantly at the quarterback position next year. They may not even have one because they'll probably be drafting in the middle of the pack. Great. I'm rooting for more fun game Steelers games to watch, but it is a little bit of a bummer when you watch Joe Burrow in the night game and you're like, damn it, that was fun. We watched C.J. Stroud, or hell, even when you watch Dak Prescott, you know, just competent play would be great. And I'm not excusing the rest of the Steelers team. I just think you'd be seeing a massive, massive increase if the Steelers were getting average quarterback play. You'd be seeing a big, people wouldn't be talking about the Steelers this way of like, this is hilarious. Look what they're doing. They're winning. They'll probably upset some people and then they'll lose in the playoffs. Because what are the last few results in the playoffs for the Steelers? Did they give up 50 to the Chiefs, 50 to the Browns, 48 to the Jaguars? Like, it's bad when they get to the playoffs. You know, they can't play with the big boys. And this mindset of just the emotional hoping is not going to cut it. And if you want to turn around to the defensive side of the ball, I guess the main takeaway is this. So bummed for Cole Holcomb, that terrible injury he suffered. Hoping he gets a quick recovery to be back next year. He was a huge part of the Steelers defense. That sucks. It's unbelievably cool seeing the Steelers move T.J. Watt around on the defense the way that the Cowboys do for Micah Parsons. You see T.J. playing over the center. I think Alex Kozora and John Lediard have breakdowns of that. I haven't checked the other guys. But I was jumping up and down while I was watching the game saying, oh my gosh, he's not. Stoop kid left his stoop. The stoop kid has left his stoop. Stoop man for T.J. Always plays on the left side. They're moving him around. It's not necessarily about him getting sacks from those positions. It's about making him unbelievably difficult to game plan for, making the Steelers defense difficult to game plan for, because you've been seeing over the course of this year, TJ's getting three guys dedicated to him. It's like tight end chips, running back chips, tackle gets him. Like, teams are in the film room and they're saying, this is a problem. We cannot let this guy wreck the game. So here's how we're going to attack it. Well, if you give TJ 12 snaps at different positions on the field, Alex Highsmith is going to dominate. Herbig is going to make his plays. Cam Hayward, everybody benefits from it because it just becomes more complicated to deal with the Steelers. So that's really cool. The Joey Porter Jr. thing, I don't even want to talk about it because it's so exciting. So far, here's the review. He's been very good. He kind of owned DeAndre Hopkins. Kind of the perfect matchup for him. Joey Porter, super long and athletic. And, you know, Hopkins, not fast at all. Just one of the great jump ball contested catch guys in history, really. And he got him frustrated. Yeah, Joey got a few penalties. Not all of them were penalties. The final one is bull crap. That's the NFL doing, you know, scaring the refs into calling defensive fouls to extend the final drive of every single game. If you watch around the NFL, you'll see some ridiculous defensive hold or interference or roughing on the final drive of the game when everyone's butts get tight. But, you know, Joey's got a couple penalties. That's what he did at Penn State. That's one of those things. Hey, I do hope that you can clean that up. And what we're talking about with Kenny randomly spraying the ball and that being a more difficult trait to clean up, you know, Joey getting penalties on defense, who knows? Maybe he will, maybe he won't. The thing is, that generally is considered a skill set that is improvable for a cornerback because it's very reliant on technique. And a lot of times these guys in college are just so athletic that they don't have a ton of technique. Well, he's going to have to learn his technique. So hopefully he cleans that up. But the guy followed DeAndre Hopkins on like 70% of the snaps. I think someone interviewed him after the game, said last dude who did that was, and before they could get out his name, Joey interjected and he laughed. He said, yeah, Uncle Ike. He said, that's Ike Taylor. So obviously Joe Hayden had a nice run with the Steelers too, but very exciting there. But my whole opinion of the Steelers, just it relates to the offense. That's the way the game is played now. They have changed the rules. That is how you play the game now. There will never be another Ravens. Even the Denver Broncos thing was a lifetime ago, right? So when we analyze the Steelers' defense, who gives up yards and they give up huge plays to Will Levis, who looks phenomenal, and who knows if he'll succeed or not, but at least he passes some baseline tests in terms of, man, he can just sit in the pocket. He is unfazed. He doesn't scramble out, and he can make different types of throws to every place of the field. You know, he's very composed. I know Steelers fans are angry, and they would say, he threw the ball away in the last drive. It's like, look, the Titans are like the least talented team in the league right now. One of them, you know, Cardinals and some others, but he was on a final drive to try to win the game. He needed a touchdown. Did you want him to throw the check down and time to run out? Oh, well, at least I didn't throw the pick. He's throwing passes he wasn't throwing throughout the rest of the game because he's just got to try to win it. So you got to admire that. And also, you don't even have to admire it. It's just common sense, right? The guy's trying to win the game. He literally has no other option than to make reckless throws. But with the defense, it just doesn't matter until you see what you have with the offense. Look at the Jets. Like, they're not going to, they actually could win a playoff game. There's no way in hell that they can win like multiple and get to the Super Bowl, but you need the offense to really understand what a defense can do, because defense now, to me, and I think the Steelers understand this, it's about splash plays and it's about red zone defense, because they've made it too difficult with the rules for you to just shut people down. So chaos is kind of the name of the game. Steelers have been very good with splash plays. Turnovers are a little bit of a luck stat. We know that. They can wildly fluctuate from year to year, but the Steelers have consistently been pretty solid there in sacks as well, because they have awesome edge rushers, and that creates problems, you know. And Cam getting his legs back under him, he definitely made a few plays, but if he can really get back into form for the end of this year, you got him and Keanu Benton hopefully get more snaps in the middle. That front is going to force people to throw the ball to Minka if we can get him back on the field sooner rather than later as well. So I don't have a ton of opinions on the Steelers defense. I just know that they had major problems at inside linebacker, and they did a spectacular job of revitalizing that position group in the offseason. They made some unbelievably reckless decisions by letting Mike Hilton and Cam Sutton, two corners that they actually developed, who have played awesome for their other teams. They were cheap to retain. Don't know why they didn't do it. But hey, drafting Joey Porter looks like a little bit of a move so far. If Joey Porter turns out to be a guy, they kind of just need one more corner to say, hey, you got an elite safety, you got elite edge rushers, you got a good D-line, you got good inside linebackers, you got two good corners. What more can you ask for? It's the salary cap era. You're not going to get more than that. So I do, I think they're fine. I mean, there's so much pressure on them because the offense doesn't move the ball. But it was awesome to see a first drive touchdown. Awesome to see Matt Canada switching it up. The George Pickens thing, there's plenty out there on that. Look, it's a bummer. We've been calling it almost since he got drafted. Not even as haters, just as people who have been watching for the past few. This is what happens now. This is the NFL. You know, to his credit, until this game, he wasn't demonstrative about how they've been. Look, the Steelers have been ruining his career. I know this is so lame for him to come out and do this right after the Steelers win and after, just barely halfway through the season. And so I disagree with what he's doing. It was awesome to see Deontay come out and make a post basically saying, hey, talk to George. Hopefully it's all good. I think Allen Robinson gave an interview on that. Steelers are very lucky to have those guys kind of be level heads in the locker room. But look, when you're a receiver in the NFL, we know they're all divas, but your money is directly tied to production. When you're an offensive lineman, there aren't stats. Like, pancakes isn't a real stat. That doesn't have anything to do with anything, right? When you're a receiver, more than anything, except for maybe a running back, but they don't get contracts, your pay is determined by how often they give you the chance to catch the ball. And when you look at Juju Smith-Schuster, who was way too maligned by Steelers fans, I mean, I think Steelers fans didn't like him because he was the ushering in of a new era of human in Gen Z. In every era in the history of humanity, thinks the era under them is insufferable. That's just how it goes. That's how our parents feel about our generation and their parents feel about their generation. And that rubbed people the wrong way because Juju would do cringy dances. But then also he was the most physical receiver the Steelers had since Hines Ward, was unbelievably dependable. Yep, had a couple bad fumbles, but other than that, he had way more big plays. Played hurt constantly. He killed Vontaze perfect. He was never complained. And then his career got destroyed when Ben's elbow got hurt. The guy was like a 115 catch, 10 touchdown guy the year before. That's minimum $15 million. That's what we were talking about with him. Like, oh, damn it, you're not going to be able to pay him. It's going to at least $15 million. He gets terrible stats with Duck and Mason. Terrible, because they can't get him the ball. They turn this guy who could play every position on the field very well. He's not a true number one, but he's a very high-end number two. He can make – there's all these highlights of him mossing A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey in their prime for the Jaguars. Guy could do everything, and all they would do is throw him one-yard crossing routes and let him get decapitated by linebackers. His stats go down. I think he signs like a one-year, $10 million contract with the Steelers and then just like never makes money again. I think he got a decent deal with the Patriots this year, but still, you're still losing out on tens and tens of millions of dollars, and he never complained about it. And so that's awesome. But at the same time, he was a very good player, and he doesn't get his money, and he doesn't get his career because he played for an abnormally bad offensive team, because that's what the Steelers have been. This isn't like, you know, a functioning offensive team that doesn't do well. This is a team that scores one touchdown a game constantly. They're setting records for ineptitude. So George Pickens he is completely justified to feel frustrated. And they need to change three catches in the past 2 weeks. They need to change that. And I'm referring to Kenny and in Canada. You need to scheme up some more touches for him. And yes, he needs to, you know, catch the ball in the end zone. That was shocking when he didn't hit the toe drag there. But come on, what are we doing here? We've seen George Pickens. This guy could be a top five receiver in the league anywhere else. But he's in Pittsburgh with an abnormally bad offense, and so his career is suffering. So he is justified to be mad. Now, is he justified to just go completely against the team and come out there and demand a trade right after they win and then unfollow everybody and then tell all the fans that they're gaslighting him? Well, he's gaslighting the fans by saying, what do you mean? That wasn't about football. Like, so you posted a picture of yourself and said, free me, and then you unfollowed the quarterback, the head coach, and the team, and it's not about football? Okay. He's a young kid, though. He's young. I know we'd like to think that we can relate to these guys. We cannot. They have way different lives than us. You know, that's a way different track, being a football star in Georgia and then going to be a star for the Steelers. But so he has a right there, but hate to see that he's doing that. Steelers need to make improvements so that they can keep the one fun thing we have, which is George Pickens. You cannot take that away from us, guys. And hopefully they're able to calm George down, because obviously that's not the way to go about it. But anyways, that's it for me. At Steelers Outpost on Twitter, SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Until next week, go Steelers.